dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas, and Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and your guide for the war of ideas, which we wage here every weekday with the best in the business. And that will be the case today, I think, in spades. We have Yoram Edinger, former Israeli ambassador to Washington, a man who has worked intensively on U.S.-Israeli relations for his entire career. We'll be getting his take on some very troubling reports coming out of Jerusalem as to what may be in the offing, either as a result of what Bibi Netanyahu might be induced to do when he comes to Washington, or because perhaps of President Obama's willingness to accept the unilateral declaration of a Palestinian state. What would be the implications of that for not just our friends in Israel, but for all of us? We'll get into that with Yoram Edinger in segment one. Segment two, we'll be talking with Elaine Donnelly, the brilliant leader of the Center for Military Readiness, about the gays in the military issue. We'll be getting an update from her. A lot is going on this score, and the question is, to what end? And it's not entirely clear. We'll find out whether the military may yet be spared this very serious assault on its future viability. Ralph Peters, Lieutenant Colonel, retired United States Army, will be weighing in with us in segment three about the president's travels in Asia. What did it mean that he chose to go to India and not to Pakistan? And what might be in prospect there and elsewhere? Ralph Peters of FoxNews.com and a great contributor to us here at Secure Freedom Radio in segment three. And finally, in segment four, Patrick Poole, one of the country's leading counterterrorism experts, will be talking about a most important press conference that the Center for Security Policy sponsored with members of its Team B2 group, in which Patrick revealed some frightening examples of the degree to which the United States government has been systematically subjected to influence operations by the Muslim Brotherhood, and in some cases penetrated by this organization, which has as its mission destroying Western civilization from within. You're not going to want to miss the revelation that Patrick made, the most recent of a series in this respect. All of that, segment four, and straight ahead. But first up, we are delighted to welcome back Ambassador Yoram Edinger, reaching him, I believe, in Jerusalem. Mr. Ambassador, thank you as always for joining us. It's great to have you with us.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Bibi Netanyahu, the Prime Minister of Israel, is, as you know, coming to Washington at week's end. He will be spending some time talking, obviously, about the so-called peace process. And I'd like to get a sense from you, if I can, Mr. Ambassador, as to where you think this peace process stands at the moment.
So far, it does not lead to peace because it is based on a series of significantly erroneous assumptions, one of which is that the Palestinian issue is the crux of the Arab-Israeli conflict, of Middle East turbulence, of anti-American terrorism, all of which is false, and there are many ways of realizing that it is false. Not the least is Arab attitude towards the Palestinians, and we've seen it in a recent Arab summit in Libya, where when Mahmoud Abbas, the Palestinian leader, stood up to deliver his own speech, most of Persian Gulf Arab leaders left the hall. They don't forget and they don't forgive the PLO, Mahmoud Abbas, Arafat's role in facilitating the rape of Kuwait by Saddam Hussein. And that has more or less reflected Arab attitude towards the PLO. Therefore, they have showered the PLO with rhetoric, but very little resources. They do talk the talk, but they never walk the walk when it comes to the Palestinians.
Yeah. Ambassador Ettinger, one of the really worrying signs of what might come of these rounds of conversations between senior administration officials and Bibi Netanyahu in Washington next week is a report from our colleague and an old friend of yours, Carolyn Glick, out of the Jerusalem Post, to the effect that Bibi Netanyahu has agreed in principle to an extraordinary new demand from the Obama administration, namely that Israel relinquish to the Palestinian Authority, Fatah, large sections of the Jordan Valley, that is to say the parts of the West Bank or Judea and Samaria that are in the Jordan Valley, and that part of East Jerusalem as well would be relinquished, with the understanding that the Palestinians would then enter into a lease-back arrangement to the Israelis for some period of time, and that, according to Carolyn Glick, the exact length of time is in negotiation at the moment. But are you hearing reports of this kind of deal in the offing? And if it were, what would the implications be for Israel?
Well, I haven't heard such reports. My hope is that they are not founded on facts, because for Israel and anybody else, it's much more important to sustain control of moral high ground as it is to sustain control of topographic high ground. The mountain ridges of Judea Samaria are not only essential prerequisite for the Jewish state to stay alive in the conflict-ridden, volatile, unpredictable, treacherous Middle East, but it is the cradle of Jewish history. People who aspire for future do not trade away their past, their roots, not even for such a creative formula as you propose.
Yeah. Well, needless to say, I'm not proposing it. I hope, as you do, that it won't come to pass. Let me ask you quickly, Ambassador Yoram Ettinger, who we're speaking to from Israel, he formerly served in Washington as a senior member of the Israeli delegation, the Israeli representation here to the Congress in particular, and you know this city very well, Yoram. I wonder what your sense is of how the United States will respond to the other worrying prospect we're hearing a lot about these days, namely that the Palestinians may simply declare unilaterally that they have created a state, perhaps within the borders that existed prior to the 1967 war. Do you hear that in Israel? Do you worry about it? And what would, again, the repercussions be for both Israel and us were it to happen?
Well, back in 1988, the PLO declared independence. Over 100 countries recognized it. The U.S. did not. And that has remained absolutely irrelevant that in human or in recent human history. My hope, my expectations are that should the Palestinians repeat the exercise, the U.S. Will work in the best interest of the United States, and therefore denying the Palestinian state U.S. recognition. And denial would work for U.S. interest, because the last thing that the U.S. needs is a demise of the Hashemite Kingdom of Jordan, which would follow the establishment of a Palestinian state. The last thing that the U.S. would need is enhancement of Russian and Chinese and North Korean and Iranian interest in the eastern flank of the Mediterranean, all of which would happen if a Palestinian state is established. They would grant foothold to the Russians and other rivals and enemies of the U.S. And therefore, I do hope that this recognition from the U.S. will not take place, especially now with the new Congress in Washington as of January.
And we're going to have to leave it at that. Yoram Edinger, I hope you're right. I pray you're right, for I fear that this would indeed conduce not only to what you've just described, but to the next regional war. Let's pray that all of that is avoided. Yoram Edinger, thank you so much for joining us. Next up, Elaine Donnelly on the gays in the military issue. Have we dodged a bullet? Straight ahead.
Want the big picture on national security and foreign policy? Find out what Ronald Reagan meant by peace through strength at securefreedomradio.org. You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Always have to prepare for the unexpected. My teammates and I train to think fast and be ready ahead of the game. You can be ready with the help of your local American Red Cross. The American Red Cross can help all of us prepare for life's emergencies. Take life-saving CPR or first aid courses. Make an emergency plan or learn how to build a disaster supplies kit. Contact the American Red Cross today.
Call 1-800-HELP-NOW or visit redcross.org to learn more.
Terrorist threats, global economic recession, monumental government spending, continued job losses, healthcare reform. Who can sort all of this out? Hudson Institute. Since its founding nearly 50 years ago, Hudson Institute continues to lead the pack in groundbreaking policy research. John McCain said Hudson continues to make the world less threatening to our security and more hospitable to our values. To read the latest commentary and research from Hudson's world-renowned policy experts, visit our website at www.hudson.org. You can sign up for our weekly e-newsletter, keep up to date on our latest events, podcasts, and exclusive video features, and follow us on Twitter and Facebook. Visit www.hudson.org.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney, host of Secure Freedom Radio. We are proud to have joined this superb, intelligent talk lineup at WRC 1260 AM. Join us every weeknight from 9 to 10 p.m. for your personal, daily, national security brief by the very best in the business. That's Secure Freedom Radio, now from 9 to 10 weeknights at WRC 1260 AM. Far and away, the most intelligent talk in Washington, D.C.
Her boyfriend. You with the driver?
Yes, doctor, but I didn't mean to hurt her. I only had a few drinks. I was just buzzed.
Just buzzed? Oh, then your girlfriend is fine.
Hey, sweetie. I feel great.
She's really okay?
What, are you kidding? No, not really. Nurse, get me a suture kit. Stat.
Buzzed driving. Maybe we should stop acting like it's no big deal. Buzzed driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation and the Ad Council.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. We are joined by Elaine Donnelly, the truly extraordinary, I'd even say magnificent, driving force behind a most important organization, the Center for Military Readiness, an organization she founded and leads brilliantly, on behalf of those in uniform who are not always able to defend themselves, ironically, against the social agendas that are pushed by feminists and homosexual activists and others who have no appreciation for the military culture that underpins our armed forces and their effectiveness in defending us against the enemies we confront around the world. And Elaine Donnelly, it is always terrific to have you with us, and most especially at a moment when so much ferment is taking place in the area, particularly of the question of gays in the military. So welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio.
Thank you, and thank you for all the kind words and for all your support. In recent months especially, it's been a very difficult year. We're fighting on three fronts now, but you've been there and stalwart the whole time.
Well,
and
we
look forward to putting some of these issues to rest
at
the end of this Congress.
I want to talk about that, but let's go through each of those in turn. But first of all, Elaine, very quickly, What is at stake with respect to this question of having avowed homosexuals allowed to serve openly in the United States Armed Forces, as President Obama, the Secretary of Defense, the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, seems so intent on having mm-hmm. happen?
Well, you mentioned the culture of the military. That is what is at stake. The culture of the military, meaning how things are done. It is so important. If you don't have a strong military culture that is based on good order, discipline, morale, readiness, the kinds of qualities that are intangible, but without which you just have a collection of people armed with weapons, you must have all of those factors. And the problem is that legislation to say no discrimination against people who are lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender, if you turn the military into an equal opportunity employer like any other, you really do weaken national defense, national security. It's not fair to the men and women who volunteer to serve. It really puts at risk our entire national security and national defense.
And that is fundamentally because men and women serving in uniform often find themselves in situations of forced intimacy, as they say.
That's right.
In which having people who are sexually attracted to them, whether it's showers or latrines or bunks or what have you, could be absolutely corrosive, if I understand you correctly, to the culture of the military.
That's right. That phrase, forced intimacy, is actually in the current law. The current law has 15 findings, and they make it clear that homosexuality makes you ineligible for military service. Don't ask, don't tell is an administrative policy that confuses the issue. That was a Bill Clinton invention. But the actual law that Congress passed, which is at risk right now, is based on sound principles. The military is different than the civilian world. There is no constitutional right to serve. That is the law that is very much at risk.
Let's go through those quickly, starting with, I guess, the Congress. There is this effort to repeal the law. Where does it stand as we speak?
On September 21, a great victory occurred when Senator John McCain objected and received the support of 41 other senators against a motion to proceed on the defense authorization bill. Normally, that's not done. But this bill was loaded down with social issues, the legislation to repeal the law on gays in the military, abortions in military hospitals, even the DREAM Act, a very liberal immigration factor was in there. Harry Reid pushed his luck. He lost. Senator McCain won. The military breathed a sigh of relief, dodged a bullet, as you wrote. That was a great victory. And now the advocates of repeal are starting to realize their window of opportunity is narrowing. So they're turning to the other two branches of government to somehow finish line.
But before we leave the Congress, there is this lame duck session, and
yes,
there has been a very strong push to get this repeal legislation through the Senate during the lame duck session. Is that likely to happen in your...
The attempt is very likely. The president has made it clear. The factors are not favorable to the advocates of repeal right now. But they are hoping and counting on the report of the Pentagon, the what is called the Comprehensive Review Working Group. It's a working group in the Pentagon that's supposed to come out with a report on how to implement repeal of the law. They are counting on that report.
Now, let me just ask you, Elaine
Donnelly, that it creates the impression there will be no harm to the military.
Yeah, and let me just ask you, did this working group have as part of its mandate assessing the sentiment of people in the military about the idea of repeal? Was that part of this review or not?
That is what most people believed would be the case. I think many members of Congress were led to believe that there would be an assessment of the opinions of average military people in uniform, all branches of the service, and so on. However, the working group has instead followed the mandate of the president. They did not even ask questions in any of the survey instruments that they had. Do you favor repeal of the law, or do you want it to stay as it is? That question,
which really goes to the heart of this question of the military culture. Would you stay in the military if mm-hmm. this repeal took place? Would you encourage others to join the military to participate in a military culture of a very different kind? So that wasn't asked. So
it wasn't.
Therefore, they have not elicited the sentiments Is that fair to say? Or did they in fact get some sentiments anyway, even though they weren't asking the question, for example,
well,
in this town
halls? Hearing is that in the survey instruments, when people had the option of typing in a response, or at these focus groups that they had in various places around the country and around the world, when people reached an impasse, well, what do you do about this privacy issue? You have to throw together all the sexual orientation groups. Absolutely no separation between those who are homosexual and those who are not. Everybody knows this, okay? So what are you going to do about this problem? People would say, well, don't repeal the law. It makes no sense to repeal the law. They were routinely told, look, that opinion is not here. We're not here to discuss that. You tell us how to solve the problem. And this pattern has been consistent in the working group sessions that have occurred, according to sources that have contacted my organization. And we know that in Stuttgart, Germany, a lieutenant general by the name of Thomas Bostick went so far as to say, look, everybody is going to have to get with the program. He used derogatory words that I don't even want to repeat to describe people who might disagree, and made it very clear they would not be welcome in the military. So we're putting at risk recruiting in the all-volunteer force, okay? You can't force people to join the military, not, well, we don't have a draft,
yep.
And retention, because right. If starting with chaplains and people of faith, but not limited only to them.
All right, Elaine, we're going
to
run out of time here.
Leave.
Yeah, we're going
to
run out of time. We're talking with Elaine Donnelly. She mentioned her organization. It is the Center for Military Readiness. I encourage you to take a look at it. CMRlink.org, I believe, is the website.
That's right.
Elaine, there have been reports, despite what you've just said, that the surveys conducted by this comprehensive review working group have in fact established that the military is okay with repeal of this law. What's the backstory behind that?
The backstory is when we wrote to the co-chairman of the committee, Jay Johnson, who's also the DOD General Counsel, he told me in an email, well, that story really isn't correct. The person, the alleged source, got it wrong. So I immediately wrote back and said, well, why didn't you tell the media that? And in a very extensive letter, I pointed out, unlike the situation with General Bostick, who I mentioned a few minutes ago, that statement of his was denied vehemently. In this case, they let the false story stand. Now, what does this tell you about the integrity of the Comprehensive Review Working Group? If they are allowing false stories to be reported as true, because it serves the president's agenda, this is a sad day. It reflects badly on the integrity and the credibility of the Department of Defense. It shows that the administration wants to put politics ahead of principle. The American people are catching on to this. So members of Congress, I think, when they get this report, they will know that it has been skewed by presidential politics. I'm sure they will insist that there be an extensive review, because in the footnotes there will be material that we have presented.
Yeah, you've got great material in this, but I'm afraid the case that the study has been compromised.
Mm-hmm.
Thank God we'll have a new Congress taking a hard look at this, I think, before any further action takes place. And we'll come back to you soon to talk about the judiciary and its involvement in all of this as well. Thank you, Elaine Donnelly, so much for your leadership and great work. Keep it up. Next up, Ralph Peters on the President's travels to Asia. What are the strategic implications? Straight ahead.
Download podcasts, hear clips, read the bios of the amazing people Frank Gaffney interviews, all at SecureFreedomRadio.org. Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the War of Ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
This morning, a woman reached out. A man stepped up. A family drove their elderly neighbor to the doctor. Someone took 2 hours of their morning to help someone else find affordable childcare near work. Somebody sat down with 16-year-old Steven and taught him better note-taking skills and study habits, and suddenly, toughing it out till graduation seemed to Steven a pretty good idea. All this happened today. It'll happen tomorrow. It's happening here, there, right down the street. People are living united. We're not just wearing the shirt, we're living it. We're realizing that the way we live our lives can impact the way others live theirs, their education, their income, even their health. So do something, any little something, as long as it's something. Give, advocate, volunteer. Live United. Go to liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney, host of Secure Freedom Radio. We are proud to have joined the superb, intelligent talk lineup at WRC 1260 AM. Join us every weeknight from 9 to 10 p.m. for your personal, daily, national security brief by the very best in the business. That's Secure Freedom Radio, now from 9 to 10 weeknights at WRC 1260 AM. Far and away, the most intelligent talk in Washington, D.C.
Charles the Carpet King will carpet your entire house for only $39. That's right, your entire house for only $39. But don't expect Charles the Carpet King to do it himself, because Charles the Carpet King passed away last week at 47 from the same disease that got his father, so he won't be around for his family. And sadly, it could have been detected early with a simple test, but Charles didn't get it.
Have you gotten the medical test you need? For a list of tests every man should have, go to AHRQ.gov. A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Terrorist threats, global economic recession, monumental government spending, continued job losses, healthcare reform. Who can sort all of this out? Hudson Institute. Since its founding nearly 50 years ago, Hudson Institute continues to lead the pack in groundbreaking policy research. John McCain said Hudson continues to make the world less threatening to our security and more hospitable to our values. To read the latest commentary and research from Hudson's world-renowned policy experts, visit our website at www.hudson.org. You can sign up for our weekly e-newsletter, keep up to date on our latest events, podcasts, and exclusive video features, and follow us on Twitter and Facebook. Visit www.hudson.org.
Radio that improves your chances for survival in a dangerous world. Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney. Make Facebook your source for essential national security analysis. Search for Frank Gaffney and add him to your friends list.
We're back at Secure Freedom Radio and joined by our friend and very esteemed colleague, Ralph Peters, a Fox News strategic analyst, man you see frequently commenting on the great matters of national security and foreign policy of our day, there and elsewhere, and we're always privileged to have him with us here at Secure Freedom Radio. Ralph, you are the author of innumerable books, it seems, including Endless War, Middle Eastern Islam versus Western Civilization, and The War After Armageddon. I'm told just now, but there is a new book in the offing in January, The Officers Club, a novel set in the post-Vietnam War Army. And this sounds like a fascinating contribution to our understanding of something we talked about with Elaine Donnelly a moment ago, the military culture and what makes it possible for our armed forces to do the hard jobs that you have contributed to in the past and are helping us better understand today. So thank you again for joining us here at Secure Freedom Radio. It's always great
always
to have you with
pleasure,
us.
Frank.
Listen, you have been following, I know, President Obama's travels in Asia, specifically the trip that he's just completed today in India. What is your take on that visit, and specifically the overlay, really, I guess, of what he was doing in India, namely the ongoing controversy or controversy, the struggle between Pakistan and India in the subcontinent?
Well, I believe in giving the devil his due. And Obama got this one whoppingly right. The curve for the Obama administration, as you know, Frank, the learning curve has been very, very steep. These people came to the White House, a closed cabal from Chicago, convinced that they were smarter than everybody else, that they understood the world better than everybody else, and that they could just, you know, plug into the socket and fix it. And it turned out that the world's a little more complex than that. Governing is a little harder than that. And so they came in with these naive, idealistic, save the world, part the waters views. And the last 2 years, has driven them towards sobriety. So what I think you saw here was a very important move with the 3 days in India, an important emerging power, the world's largest democracy, if indeed it's still a very troubled one. It was sending a clear message to Pakistan that, hey, we're sick of it. And I think the Obama administration couldn't be told. They had to learn for themselves how treacherous, how duplicitous and greedy the Pakistanis are. They had to learn for themselves that the Pakistanis continue to selectively support terrorists in Afghanistan, against India, in Kashmir. And I do believe that the administration sobered up and was sending a message to Pakistan that India is the future, and if Pakistan doesn't get with the program, it's going to be left ever farther behind. Now, Frank, I have to add that my great fear, and it may not happen now, thank heavens, my great fear has been that Obama would, after all, tack on a lightning visit to Pakistan, land at a Pakistani airbase for security reasons, press the flesh, grip and grin and go, just so the Pakistani feelings wouldn't be hurt. But Pakistani feelings need to be hurt, and I hope he's going to stick to that and come home without pandering to them again. So anyway, bottom line on this, India is critical to our future in the Indian Ocean. And it's not called the Indonesian Ocean. It's not called the East African Ocean. It's the Indian Ocean, a strategic cockpit for the 21st century. India has a growing navy. It can certainly help us. But it's just natural to seek out India as a counterbalance to China and sends a strong signal to China as well as to Pakistan. So although there are going to be bumps, and elderly Indian politicians still have a hangover from the non-aligned movement, some of the generals are recalcitrant, but the younger generation and the new breed of Indian politicians realize clearly that they can't deal with China alone, that an alliance across the board, not just military, but economic, et cetera, with the United States, is essential to their future. But the practical details are going to take years to work out.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about one of the details that the president put on the table yesterday. Ralph Peters, Lieutenant Colonel, U.S. Army, retired, and Fox News strategic analyst and periodic contributor to us here at Secure Freedom Radio. He said he would support the Indian ambition to achieve a permanent seat on the U.N. Security Council. Currently, as you know, from the inception of the U.N., a very closed club, a group of five nations at this point, the United States, Russia, China, Britain, and France. But India is one of several other nations that have sought this status, and the veto power that it has as a prominent feature. What should we think about, in your estimation, that idea, both as a lubricant, presumably, to the kind of strategic relationship you've talked about here, and in the face of the fact that China seems dead set against the idea?
Well, 2 points on that one. First of all, this is the way diplomacy is supposed to work. Obama was 100% right in making this gesture, and that's what it was, a gesture toward India, in saying that he would back, and the USA would back, India assuming a permanent seat on the Security Council. It doesn't cost us anything. So it makes the Chinese and Russians mad? Big deal. And the Russians have to play along, actually, because they want to keep some claws into India from going back to the Cold War period. So the Chinese are the odd people out, but it's time we started standing up to China and not letting them roll over us. So great freebie for India, sends a message to China, And nothing's going to happen for several years, probably for a decade or so on this, because things move slowly and China will keep vetoing it, unless there's a big turnaround in Beijing. Now, the second point is there are three nations with relatively strong claims to a seat, a permanent seat on the UN Security Council. It's India, Brazil, and Germany. Germany should not get one, unless it's rotating with France, which has one already, because the Europeans already have two seats of the five. They've got Britain and they've got France. I would argue, although the French would certainly howl, that it should be a seat for Britain and a seat for the European Union, which would be more equitable. But the Europeans don't need any more seats. It would only be fair in this changed world if the subcontinent and South America, Latin America, each had a seat. And so the logical contenders are the booming Brazilian economy, although Brazil still remains more troubled than people realize, and India, this country of 1.2 billion people, world's largest democracy, moving in the right direction.
Yeah.
So again, Obama made a gesture that cost the United States nothing, thrilled the Indians, sent a message to China, sent a message to Pakistan. I mean, as you know, Frank, I'm no Obama fan. But I think this guy is learning a little bit, at least.
Yeah. This is a point on which I think probably we disagree a little bit. And I think it's over this question of whether it will cost us nothing. I'm not a fan of the United Nations, and I think you're probably not either. And you're certainly right, especially in the face of Chinese opposition, that this isn't going to eventuate probably anytime soon. There have been moments when the UN Security Council has been a useful vehicle for us. I fear that the more we include these other actors, the more we are assured that it will be absolutely of no use and possibly of further detriment to us, by virtue of the fact that it becomes even more difficult to get anything done when you have not five competing veto-wielding nations, but maybe as many as seven or even eight. And I don't want to belabor the point, Ralph Peters, except to say that giving the devil his due means, it seems to me, also recognizing that the president's predilections for the United Nations are a source of continuing concern to me, as well as perhaps evidence, as you say, that he's becoming more skillful in his role as our chief diplomat. But let me segue, if I can, to
Frank, let me think of something quickly.
Go ahead.
First of all, I think you've seen the president relying on the United Nations less and less. Second, look, at present, China and Russia are 40% of permanent seats. Well, India wouldn't always agree with us, or Brazil. I think diluting it a little bit is not a bad thing. But also, when we move to expand the permanent seats, we should also move to remove the ability of one nation to veto everything. It should be a two or three or something. But reform of the UN would have to be part of a total package. And be careful with, you know, damning the UN. Yes, it works against our interests sometimes. Yes, it's a huge waste of money. It's a sink of corruption. Got it. But the UN's real purpose is to give unemployed developing world diplomats a job. And it keeps them from launching coups in their own country. So the corruption, the greed, the seductive prostitutes of New York really help keep world peace.
Oh, I see. Well, this this is a slightly more cynical view even than I was capable of.
Hunkers for hope.
Ralph Peters, listen, the issue of whether the president is in fact making less use of the UN or working more behind the scenes may come to a head here shortly, and we'll be talking with you about this, I hope, in the I hope we won't be talking about it, but should it eventuate, we'll be talking with you about this in the not-too-distant future, namely, if the United Nations becomes the vehicle for the president's endorsement of a unilateral Palestinian state, something which I fear we talked about earlier in the program with Yoram Edinger may well be conducing to the next war, a subject you know a lot about. Colonel Ralph Peters, thank you so much for joining us, as always,
and
for engaging in a stimulating conversation about the president and his travels. We'll look forward, to visiting with you soon. Next up, Patrick Poole with a new revelation about the penetration of our government by the Muslim Brotherhood. Straight ahead.
Miss a show? Find podcasts of Frank and the world's leading national security experts and policymakers at securefreedomradio.org. Ever vigilant, Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Terrorist threats, global economic recession, monumental government spending, continued job losses, healthcare reform. Who can sort all of this out? Hudson Institute. Since its founding nearly 50 years ago, Hudson Institute continues to lead the pack in groundbreaking policy research. John McCain said Hudson continues to make the world less threatening to our security and more hospitable to our values. To read the latest commentary and research from Hudson's world-renowned policy experts, visit our website at www.hudson.org. You can sign up for our weekly e-newsletter, keep up to date on our latest events, podcasts, and exclusive video features, and follow us on Twitter and Facebook. Visit www.hudson.org.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney, host of Secure Freedom Radio. We are proud to have joined the superb, intelligent talk lineup at WRC 1260 AM. Join us every weeknight from 9 to 10 p.m. for your personal daily national security brief by the very best in the business. That's Secure Freedom Radio, now from 9 to 10 weeknights at WRC 1260 AM. Far and away, the most intelligent talk in Washington, D.C.
Hey, Charlie, what gives?
Hey, did you see that play last night?
Oh, unbelievable. What do they feed that guy?
Yeah, but they still lost.
Yeah, I know.
You know, when I was playing, what we tried to
you,
do...
You played on Biltmore Street.
Hey, come on. I play in the service.
Oh, right.
Anyhow, what I'm trying to say is the kid, he
should have fallen down. Hey, you okay? Stop joking around. Oh, no. Someone call 911!
It can happen anytime, any place, without warning. Fact is, 2 out of 3 people with diabetes die of a heart attack or stroke, and many don't even know they're at risk. The good news is, if you or someone you love has diabetes, you can lower the risk, but it's up to you to ask your healthcare provider how. For more information, go to diabetesactnow.org. That's diabetesactnow.org. Brought to you by the American Diabetes Association and the Ad Council.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio. Now more with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back. And for segment 4, we have a particularly, I think, important contribution made by a colleague and member of the esteemed Team B2 group that put together Sharia, the Threat to America. There was a press conference earlier today in New York City, featuring, among others, members of our team's group, Patrick Poole, our guest in this segment. Patrick is a counterterrorism expert of great renown. He consults with law enforcement, the military, and other federal agencies, and contributes very actively, I'm happy to say, to the public's awareness of the counterterrorism problem through his periodic publications in Pajamas Media and our superb website, bigpeace.com. And Patrick, it's always great to have you with us at Secure Freedom Radio. Thank you for, again, these contributions, including the white paper that you released today at our press conference about the 10 failures of the United States government on the domestic Islamist threat. Tell us about a couple of these as sort of examples of the problem that we're confronting in terms of the influence operations run against and, in some cases, the penetration of the United States government by the Muslim Brotherhood.
Well, Frank, thanks for having me. Really, the heart of the paper
what I'm trying to communicate is that, we're presenting the Team B concept, but really what the paper is designed to demonstrate is that the Team A approach, which is the received wisdom that you'll find at any federal, state, or local agency, has proven to be a complete serial failure. And that's not just something that's, happened 18 years ago, with Abdurrahman Alamoudi establishing the DOD chaplain program and being a State Department civilian ambassador. That extends to the day where we have, a known Hamas operative, Kifa Mustafa, being escorted around the top secret National Counterterrorism Center. And this is also a bipartisan problem that we have. It's not a Democrat problem. The Bush administration was just as much of a complete failure on this issue as the Clinton or Obama administrations.
Now let's start with this Mustafa guy, because I think this is one of the most recent of these episodes. This is a fellow, as you say, is a known Hamas operative. He was not only escorted, as I understand it, around some of our most sensitive facilities, including the National Counterterrorism Center, but he actually was part of a rather lengthy FBI Citizens Academy. How does a guy who is a Hamas operative, an unindicted co-conspirator in the Holy Land trial, by the way, get that kind of treatment by the FBI?
Well, and that's precisely the question: is how exactly did that happen? Earlier this year, Mustafa had been decertified as a Illinois State Police chaplain because he couldn't pass a background check. And yet, a couple weeks after that, he ends up in this six-week FBI Citizens Academy program sponsored by the FBI Chicago Field Office, which on the FBI's own website says that you have to pass a background check to be able to participate. And I think this is, again, with this white paper that we presented at the press conference today, this represents the schizophrenic approach when it comes to this issue, where we have one side of the government saying these guys are bad dudes, and then you have the political appointees and public affairs people saying, oh, hey, these are our outreach partners. And in some cases, it's the exact same people.
Yeah. And let's just drill down for a minute. Patrick Poole, a counterterrorism expert and one of the members of our Team B2 at the Center for Security Policy. The people that we're talking about here have in common a connection to what is known as the Muslim Brotherhood. And remind us, Patrick Poole, what the Muslim Brotherhood's mission in America is.
Well, fortunately, we know what the Muslim Brotherhood, what their game plan is, because they put it up in English on their own official website, which says that they're about imposing Sharia law and reestablishing the caliphate. That's their global agenda. But we know from the Akram memo that was submitted in the Holy Land Foundation trial, where they specifically say that their intent is to wage a civilizational jihad from within our country, using and destroying us from within by our own hands, meaning you and I, and also the hands of the believers, the Muslim Brotherhood people. And that's what they say that their agenda is.
Which makes the fact that the FBI, among other agencies that you document in this important new white paper, and by the way, folks, you can find it at the Center for Security Policy's website, securefreedom.org. I commend it to you. It's by Patrick Poole, a leading expert in who these guys are and the extent to which they are, in fact, the Muslim Brothers, succeeding in influencing and, in some cases, as I say, penetrating our government. And Patrick, in the remaining time we have, let's go back to a fellow that you referred to a moment ago, Abdurrahman Alamoudi, a man who was a prominent figure, in fact, arguably one of the leading lights of the Muslim Brotherhood for over a decade. You mentioned that he was involved in training chaplains for the United States military and prison system. How could that have happened? And what do we now know flowed from that incredible miscarriage of process and arguably justice?
Well, Alamoudi pled guilty back in 2004, and we're still...
To what charges?
He was working, he admitted to operating with Libyan intelligence in an assassination plot, sentenced to 23 years in prison. And the following year, in 2005, the Treasury Department came out and identified Alamoudi as one of the top Al-Qaeda financiers in America. And again, this was a guy who was the most frequent Muslim visitor to the White House during the Clinton and Bush administrations, and was kind of the top political activist and Islamic activist in America. And exactly what happened to these military chaplains that Alamoudi handpicked and trained, it is still open for question. No one... As our Team B colleague Joe Schmitz, the letter we released today at the press conference, there's really been no resolution to that. We're 6 years after the fact, and there's been no resolution to what exactly happened to these guys that Alamoudi handpicked.
And tell us who was involved in their training.
Well, as I report today at Big Peace, one of the trainers that they had at the Institute for Islamic and Arabic Sciences in America, a group that ended up getting shut down, raided by the government and shut down, was Anwar Al-Awlaki, the Al-Qaeda cleric.
What?
Was one of the guys who was training these military chaplains.
This is a guy who is now in Yemen running terrorism operations against the United States, and you're telling me, and we have to let it go with this, Patrick Poole, you're telling me that this guy was involved in training Muslim chaplains, and we don't know to this day what has become of these chaplains who were recruited and trained and credentialed by Muslim Brotherhood operatives. This is staggering, folks. And it's a subject we're going to be getting back to with Patrick Poole and others in the days ahead here at Secure Freedom Radio. Patrick, thank you for joining us, for your excellent work, your appearance at the press conference today. Folks, come back tomorrow for more of what you need to know to secure your freedom and that of those you love, because it's all here at Secure Freedom Radio. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks so much for listening.
Download podcasts, hear clips, read the bios of the amazing people Frank Gaffney interviews, all at securefreedomradio.org. You've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.